Hello, this is Mystic Babylon Open Mic Poetry Podcast, broadcasting from near the Hate in San Francisco. Today I have one poet besides me. The poet is named Tom Odegaard. You can buy his book or chat books by writing Tom Odegaard, spelled O-D-E-G-A-R-D, at P.O. Box 2808, Friday Harbor, Washington, 98250, or by sending an email to tommsg@gmail.com. All of this info will be in the website show notes, and Tom will give more info when he introduces himself when he reads. You can see the cover of his newly produced book on the podcast page above the show notes. It is entitled Past Lives Led. I decided I'm going to read part of the first chapter of my new novel, Little Bird Told Me, in this poetry segment. It just came out about 2 or 3 weeks ago. If you want to read the full first chapter, it is posted at www.rhodespoetry.com. I'll probably read about 6 minutes. The reading will start shortly. Hello, this is John again. I'm going to read from the first chapter of Little Bird Told Me. Here it is, Chapter 1, Leaving Home. Feeling at their last bigoted straw, Stephen Colt Sr. and his wife, Lydia, were assessing whether to kick their son, Steve, out of the house for his drug habit and his chronic scholastic underachievement. The young man's inability to apply himself in school was caused by his general confusion and bewilderment about how to manage his education. With an undetected learning disability and no fitting mentorship, there was little to be done to ensure his success. Steve's efforts were significant, but without proper guidance, they brought him no due success in school. Even worse, he did not learn how to relate to students or teachers. Colt and his wife were opinionated yet vague when explaining their agenda to their Steve. They had all but decided that he would have to leave, but wanted to give him a few last chances to redeem himself as if he were the dark horse in a race and might yet win back their favor if he ran the course well. So Steve naively attempted to patch up his relationship with his parents. He wanted to raise their spiritual sensitivity by taking them to see a favorite guru of his who had arrived from India to visit their town. The guru was, as most gurus are, a pacifist and had even known Mahatma Gandhi. However, both of these facts were contrary to his parents' mindset, and the only thing Steve's plan was to further irritate them. During one hot, oppressive afternoon, as they all sat in the living room discussing the prospect of hearing the guru speak, Steve's father said, "We'll listen to this guru of yours talk, but I'll tell you now, there's no need for us to learn about these vain pagan habits and idolatrous ceremonies. I don't think it will help, but we'll go along with it." As he spoke, a globule of spit flew from his lips and landed on the toe of Steve's left shoe. Steve said ardently, "Pacifism is never a vain pastime, and the gods of India, like Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, are fantastically surreal and interesting. It's not just idol worship, but true religion. You are an elaborate dreamer with fanciful thoughts. Your concepts are all wrong. I don't know why you believe in pacifism," Lydia asserted, stomping her foot as if to smother Steve's passion for innovation. Steve felt stifled and inadequate. He worried, and not for the first time, that perhaps he was being irrational, and the worry made him go pale. He swallowed past the hollowness in his throat and declared, "The fruits of pacifist revolution will change the world." "Bah, revolution, insurrection," barked his father, which killed the conversation altogether. Time passed, and the day arrived when the family planned to see the guru. Steve's heart lurched as the hope that his parents once again would accept him into the fold swelled within his breast. Steve grew impatient as he waited to leave. Trying to not sound presumptuous, he carefully said, "The guru will start speaking in an hour. Shouldn't we maybe leave soon?" As if he were announcing the burning of Rome, Colt said, "We're not going. We decided that anybody who preaches pacifism this way lacks tenacity." Brazen with sudden rage, Steve shouted, "You never address my feelings. Can't you compromise? You say that the worship of Indian gods seems like idle ceremonies. Well, you are dull ceremony. You must learn from other people's ways." "Your generation needs to be censured," Colt interjected. "You shouldn't knock the ruling order. You are nothing but a pacifist Machiavelli ragdoll. The only way you have is drugs." Trying to comfort his ego, Steve searched for a term in his unsophisticated mind to define his parents' rejection. "Isn't this called pretentious and pig-headed?" he wondered to himself. This dead-end relationship continued in a very constricted manner for Steve during his last days at home. Because he was doing poorly in school, Steve's attachment to his parents was very strained. They seemed to enjoy crushing his self-esteem when he did not meet their expectations. Steve was not sturdy enough to fight back, so he collapsed under the pressure. His parents' derisive campaign caused him to believe that if he didn't jump when they said jump, he would never get anything from them. It was his last year of high school after being held back 2 years. School was almost out, and he was graduating in a few weeks. He was somewhat relieved about it, because it seemed as if he would graduate before being kicked out of his house. However, his father and his teachers continued to loom over him like mythical monsters. Their menacing presence caused Steve to cower, making him still more educationally dysfunctional. Although he was competent enough to succeed and graduate, he barely got by because nobody understood and helped him. He was smart but introverted. Unaware of any lurking neurosis, he responded to pressure, much like an oppressed little clown, not only with his teachers, but with girlfriends and classmates. I'll stop right there. This book is also going to be podcasted in serial form from littlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com. Hopefully within a month or not more than 2 months, I'll have it up in serial podcast. I hope you will be able to listen in, and please buy my book. As I've said before, I would probably starve if I tried to live off eating my books. Thank you. One last note. If you can buy my book, Little Bird Told Me, from AuthorHouse.com, I get twice the royalties from them rather than Barnes & Noble or Amazon. I don't think it's on Amazon yet. It's on Barnes & Noble, but please buy it from AuthorHouse.com. It's also probably cheaper for you there, too. Tom Odegaard will be reading shortly. Thank you very much.
Tom Odegaard, that's me. Hosts poetry readings 4 and more times a year under the sponsorships of the Friends of the San Juan Island Library in Friday Harbor, Washington. That's the state of Washington. He's was a lieutenant, is now a captain of Station 36 at Eagle Crest, and a political irritant, and resides in the county with his wife and Connie. His work has been published in Parados, UC Davis, Chiron Press, Larynx, The Blue and Gold, UC Berkeley, and in 2 recent anthologies from Sacred Grounds, a poetry cafe in San Francisco at Cole and Hayes. You can reach or write for some of his chapbooks at P.O. Box 2808, Friday Harbor, Washington, 98250. He has 5 chapbooks and a new book just out called Past Lives Led, Miss G Steps Out. The first poem I'm going to read is from the very first chapbook called What Did You Look Like Before Your Parents Were Born? And I'll start with that poem. What did you look like before your parents were born? Who was I when my parents' parents crossed that watery divide, Atlantic Rift, to settle among other refugees from Europe's failed economies, hateful of each other, a bold defense against failed families' self-esteem? Who was I then, when they lay coupled in the dark, as yet not fettered by their guilt, their get, my parents, who would one day come to share their shame and pass it on? Who was I, to whom they never spoke nor thought, till on the knees of death, seeking to break the chains of strife, they found that love and laughter had passed them by? Who was I then? The second poem is called Let Freedom Ring. I wrote this in 1988, shortly after the Berlin Wall fell. Let freedom ring the tub, but not the people or the land, lest we become dogmatic Jeffersons, whose spawn we all surmise in Eastern Europe's vast surprise. A moment past, Soviet marches were ironclad, and we could safely spit across an ocean without remiss. No more, my patriotic friend, can cries of evil empire inspire our armamental firmament, our economic dissonance. Instead, the enemy lies to us within, awaiting our discovery in the glass. We are undone. We tremble as our revolution runs across East European skeins for all that they have gained, for all that we have lost. Frontiers no longer beckon us, brave highwaymen and fools. Responsibility is an awful goad for the five-year-old adults stuck in a ring of status quo. How will we cope against the ring of fearful liberty unleashed? The children of the world begin to sing, and we stand fearful, having lost the tune. The next poem is called, also from this book, the very first book, Self to Self. Self to self cannot lie. Culture wants a single eye, one to which a coat is hung, name, number, work, and fun. But self is multiplicity, faceted by fantasies. Mother, father, lover, rake, builder, wrecker, sadist, fake. Winner, loser, soldier, girl, miser, sailor, farmer, churl. All of these and many more join at odds to build a core nearest to the ones held dear, meanest to the ones held dear, optimism checked by fear, animal that yearns to hunt, devours best the lesser runt, feels the sun on flesh denied, drives his sex with too much pride, loves the joy of sex received, gelded by the guilty deed. These I are in isolation, or rather, they're in combination. The sum of parts describes a plane, while multiplied, the whole's insane. Relations infinite beyond our cope ask whys to dim our eye-full hope. Still I be a better me, struggling on with all I be. Someday soon, time will discover singlehood is the devil's cover. Okay. One thing. This poem is from Caveat Emptor, my third volume chapbook. Finding the Girl, Fortea. Perhaps there's only one to find, to get to know. Finding is difficult, but getting to know is wading through rice paddies with pongee sticks. Every kind of torture, warfare, abandonment, imprisonment, horror trips happens to the girl before she knows who she is. And she'll never know that, hiding from the crap that happened to her before she was who. Finding the girl. Maybe I'm the girl to find, to get to know. We know the girl because we are the girl in every story. Cinder and Beauty, Gretel and Lily Marlene. Black girl, raped by everyone. Yellow girl, whipped everywhere. Red girl, raped and murdered from South to North America. Brown girl, strangled with her uterus to stop labor unions. White girl, married in white satin to bleed, bleed, bleed on a coat hanger. All the girls in alleys with broken needles, condoms, knives in their bellies. Finding the girl, so many to know, so hard to find. I know the girl because she is every girl. Some man's daughter, some woman's daughter, some brother's sister. Cruelty's favorite victim, the girl. Girls in bushes, buried in leaves, frozen in snowbanks. Outlined in stars, stoned on pedestals, beaten with fists, rods, belts, whips, anger, grief, rage, inadequacy, frustration, because they are mothers, because they are daughters, because they weep, cry, scream so well, as they were taught, because they are there. Knowing the girl and finding the girl and knowing her, you are the girl that I am. I am the girl flickering like a faulty nightlight. In the night sky, moon riding a cold wind, clouds glowing with moonlight, the boy waits in the shadows, afraid of beatings, weeping, screaming, afraid of being here or there, afraid of knowing the girl, afraid of finding the girl, bleeding in the bathroom, screaming in the attic, basement, living room, sleeping fearful under the bed, saving the boy. In church rooms, classrooms, cast rooms, bedrooms, dark rooms, bright rooms, sun rooms, and death rooms, disabled men, lost boys, are wait looking for the hard-to-find girl, the girl they'd like to know. Ever-present never, never-present ever. Everywhere men are the girl unfound, the girl unknown. Everywhere men are, the girl is unfound, the girl is unknown. When the boy is all alone, the girl is found, the girl is known. When the boy is all alone, mirrors mirror two, three, four, maybe five. When the boy is all alone, mirrors mirror son, mother, daughter, crone, and maybe father, with his mother, daughter, grandmother, daughter, great-grandmother, daughter, great-great-grandmother, daughter, to the nth. The collective mother calls the man home, but he goes to the known, which is back in the house, which is full of fists, belts, and bleeding, full of pleadings, pleasing, and more screaming. The man is the boy who no longer sees in the mirror, and the woman is the girl who cannot be found, will not be known. There is great pain, sorrow, in places where the girl cannot be found, in the when the girl cannot be known. There is a space-time where the girl is boundless, where the girl I am and the girl you are, where the boy I am and the boy you are, lose ourselves, are found, are known, are together, loving each other, loving ourselves. Finding the girl is difficult. Knowing the girl? Begin with the easy part. Find the girl. The next couple of poems are from a book called Holy Eros, and that's my fourth or fifth book. I think it's the fourth book. Also available from P.O. Box 2808, Friday Harbor, 98250 in Washington. We are so smooth together, bones, lips, tongues, hands, feet, and oh my, our sweet, soft bellies, hungering for lingerie, slip, slide, skin. We are so smooth together, we sing, watching within. The look of him filling your fingers, weighing his cool purse in your warm palm, holding him hot, up down, cylinder round. We are so smooth together. We are dreaming, lips tingling, tongues tasting, melon curves rising, pendulous nectarines falling from a jillion zillion miles to trace burning maps upon universe. We are so smooth together. Soft on my crescendo you descend, tuning your bass violin to moan, symphonic variations on galactic tunes, sent toriums of swoon. We are so smooth together. The next is a conversation between two young children who are parts of me. It's called How Wild Child Re-Entered the Garden of Eden. When we were children, small one, we were making love to the whole world the whole time. We were like the serpent Ophion, penetrating Uranome with our dance, fertilizing the earth with our bodies, our thoughts, our breath, our pleasure and our pain. When we were children, we knew Dharma and we knew Tao. We were of it, and it was of us. But I thought we were still children, Wild Child. Aren't we boys and girls stuck in the jelly past of a big? Yeah. But before we got stuck, we were part of the goddess, and we lived past, future, in the present. And Big, what about him? He tells wonderful stories. He tells me about you and Linda and Robin and Bruce and Charlie and, well, of course, Big's all of us, especially the us that didn't get stuck when we did, the us that never got stuck. But if we knew so much when we were children, how come we've forgotten all of it? I just told you about it, and I remembered it, so that's as good as not having forgotten it. And now that you can talk to him and all of us, we can start remembering together. But we're stuck, Wild Child. I'm just 4, and you, I don't know how old you are, but we're stuck. Don't you see? Can't you feel it now that Big pays attention to us, loves us? The jelly that held us is turning liquid. We're unsticking right now. Come on, feel it. You mean if I move my hand, I'll be swimming inside Mr. Big? I don't know, Wild Child. There's lots and lots of us. So there's lots of you. There's lots of me, too. What counts is personality, and you've got what it takes, 'cause you talk to and for everyone. You're our main man. More like the main kid, and we only act if we all agree. Well, then check it out. Go on. Do it. How did you know? They all agreed. Then we moved, and it's just like you said. There's lots of room in here. Now we can dream dreams, work magics, and feel our own wonders. Tell me about it. Are you the only one that's unstuck? Talk to me, small one. What are you doing? Is that little girl we used to play with in there? I'm taking inventory. Stephanie is right here. We're all scared and happy at the same time. You mean, are we unstuck from each other? Are you? Is that what I wanted? Is that what we wanted? Yes, no, maybe, yes, maybe, a little a bit, maybe a whole lot, like jumping into and out of all sorts of stories and leaping over clouds, smelling cut grass, rolling thin skin, one-on-one, holding hands, playing in the same sandbox. Love, yeah, come on in, everyone's waiting, Stephanie's waiting, here I come, here I come, here I am, oh wow, cool, hey, let's wake up the earth, laugh ourselves silly, and fertilize the Garden of Eden. This last reading is from my new book, Past Lives Led, and Miss G Steps Out. It's available from me in the same address, 2808, P.O. Box 2808, Friday Harbor, 98250, or from tommissg@gmail.com. And this first poem is very long. It's about half the book, and it's called Past Lives Led. And I'll read the first two stanzas from it. Part 1, and everyone was kind. my 54th year, a private birthday gift from C, excised, enlarged, and framed a picture from a year-end high school photograph of Debbie and me in black, unknowingly correct. For 35 years, I've held her tight, ifing the few facts I knew into an undertow of blame, shame. Now all I'd swept away, my adolescent dross, returns a tidal wave of love and loss. The past is now. We stand inside a hemlock wood. We smoke. Our horses breathe fog into the boughs that silent writhe to drop their snowy load, and monotone gray sky shows flecks of snow. She is radiant beside me, glowing with desire. As one, we cast our cigarettes aside, embrace, and mouth to mouth engage, speaking in tongues. Our clothing steams, our bodies bliss and bend, our horses stamp, and icy roads attend. I highly recommend you buy this book. It's an exceptional tour de force, if I do say so myself. I'm going to read now from the second part of the book, Miss G Steps Out, and I'm going to read first this poem called Aphrodite to Hermes. The gist of the book is that I am kind of two people. And Aphrodite and Hermes together become hermaphrodite. When you put me on or let me out, so I may cup our bosom treasures and feel skirt hem trace our knees and breathe in behind closed eyes the heady feel of dreaming female. However thin, frail, our hips may shout, my joy exceeds all worldly measures by which persons singular please their hetero when, wheres, and whys, while we as two in one are she and male. Intuitional delirium contrives twin states of mutual desire, melting new meaning to our bliss, teaching us of self and other love, transforming us into not two from one, as each our separate tangled lives evolved male and female fire into this present. I internalize a kiss, binding Aphrodite to your love, that we may rule this life we've won. The next poem is called Inside Reel, R-E-E-L. We run, we walk, we climb, we fall, on Mobius planes of nothing at all. Physic, for our soul, you, me, we perceive in quantum climes how split particles flick her, him, and back again in stanter or interfering waves, resplendent claim, debauch, ecstatic joy, ecstatic thought. We run, we walk, we climb, we fall, on Mobius trips, in nothing at all. Aware, awake, alive, alive, oh, light phantasmagoric. So in skin thin slide or Saturn glow, under reels of filio, quite consciousness. Spread like jam, we are our deeds, thoughts and plans, in stew, in soup, in film. In joy, we reel from here to clay. We run, we walk, we climb, we fall. In Mobius thoughts on nothing at all. Spin right, left, up, round, down, back, forth, so we, so you, so us may morph into a singular pot of thickish stoop, from whence big bangs and strings or soup burst out with songs that right no wrongs, nor testaments to sediments, for all we are we were before, without a trick or a singular score. We climb, we walk, we fall, we run, in Mobius thinks or kitchen sinks.
This ends Mystic Babylon Poetry Podcast. I hope you can come back again in 2 weeks. I try real hard to produce a good podcast, and I think mine is one of the best poetry podcasts that you can find on the internet today. Please tell your friends about it. Send me a comment on the Poetry Podcast page. Thank you.
This podcast is a member of the Association of Poetry Podcasting at poetrypodcasting.org.